This is the July 7 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing in Morton, Illinois, and Mike Zuzalo at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. WILLAG.org. Let's begin as usual by getting a list of items to discuss for the day. Mike Zuzalo, other than next week's USDA WASDE report, what's on your mind?
I guess talking about the spreads and the continued old crop, new crop spread wideness and how that's going to treat us between now and when the July goes off the board on the 14th.
Chip Nellinger, on your list?
Well, I'd say the weather, Todd. We've had some ample rains in some areas, but we are far from having the finish line of this crop production cycle in sight. Long way to go, and the weather still very much matters.
And Dave Chatterton.
Yeah, Todd, I mean, two very good points there from Chip and Mike. I think one other thing that we should talk about is probably just money flow in general. I think we've got a very good lesson here in the last couple of weeks about how outside market influences can, you know, push our grain fundamentals aside and kind of hijack our markets here, at least in the short term, and push them around. The volatility, you know, has been pretty amazing here and definitely something that we should be prepared for, producers should be prepared for going forward.
I'm going to come back to you and let you answer your own question in just a bit, but I'm wondering, Mike Zuzalo and Chip Nellinger, we'll start with you, Mike, first. Money flow in and out of the marketplace, how has it been impacting what's taken place in Chicago?
Well, it has been massive, and I'm really glad that Dave wanted to talk about that because, Todd, I tell you, if you didn't think a recent price action had nothing to do with funds and it was should have been about supply and demand, I think this past week should have convinced you otherwise. I can put it to you in a number. Some reports are saying that last week's commitment of traders data on futures only for agriculture was a liquidation of around 150,000 plus contracts. That equals over $8 billion. One firm that was in the Financial Times said that was the second biggest on record. And some of the hedge funds that are managing tens of billions of dollars have been shorting the markets since May. They've been focusing a lot on copper and wheat. If you would take a soft red wheat chart and a copper chart and overlay them, they would look almost identical for the last month. And that's, I think, the biggest reason why we've lost 45% of our value from the highs in soft red wheat. So to me, it's been 80%+ of the breakdown in these prices the last 3 weeks.
Chip Nellinger, any discussion points on money flow from you?
Yeah, I think the other thing that has really affected our agricultural markets and all futures markets over the last 18 months that maybe hasn't been there as big an influence previously are these retail investor ETFs, exchange-traded funds. You know, now the average everyday Joe investor doesn't have to open a futures account for exposure to commodities. They can go into their existing brokerage account that's an equity-based brokerage account. They can buy ETFs. You can buy a corn ETF. You can buy ETFs of baskets of commodities, baskets of grains. They don't have to go into the futures market. But as they invest money into those, the fund manager of those ETFs, the next step would be to come in and actually have that fund buy futures in those correlating markets. So that has been a massive influence in our markets. I got to believe also, as Mike mentioned, as traditional funds have pulled out of this, so has the retail investor. They were all about getting some exposure to inflation. And, you know, with fears of recession, I got to believe that's exaggerated this move lower as those retail investors have pulled out of those ETFs. And, you know, you ask, are they going back into stocks? Maybe just take a look at the dollar. They may just be going to the sidelines and saying, I've been beat up in everything. Nothing's worked. Equities haven't worked. Long exposure to commodities hasn't worked. Bitcoin and crypto hasn't worked. I'm shell-shocked. Take me to cash and let me catch my breath in this.
Dave Chatterton, you asked this question to begin with. What's your assessment?
Yeah, Todd, I mean, these guys hit on great points, and I think it's just something that we have to realize from a marketing or a risk management standpoint, if we're, you know, from the producer's shoes, that has a huge effect, and, you know, it's something that is very tough to predict. It's not something that we focus on day in and day out, but as Chip mentioned, we've seen the dollar go to a 19-year high this week. We've seen the treasuries roll back from the recent highs that they've had. Those are both indicative of money that's heading to the sidelines in a safe haven type of an event. When you look at the ETF and the cash type of investments, those balances and those inflows are ballooning, and that tells you that the macro market, right or wrong, is betting on recession, and whether it's here, whether it's coming, whether it will be soon, and would choose to sit in cash earning, you know, less than 2% or maybe not even 1% versus an inflation rate that's ticking along at 7 or 8. So it's very telling about the view of the economy here, and I think how money moves. For our particular part, you know, as grain marketing, you know, looking at it from an analyst standpoint, it's a question of, we were a huge beneficiary of the inflation play or the inflation carry really starting last year and coming up almost all the way through the first half of this year. As Chip highlighted, lots of money flowing in trying to catch up and find that edge to inflation. I think the trade is now somewhat soured. The macro trader has somewhat soured on the idea that commodities will give him that buffer and have pulled back. And it's a question of, does that inflation play reignite and come back, or do those funds come back in the way that they did earlier in the year? I think the answer to that is probably no. So I think it changes our outlook as far as where the price highs can be and maybe what the underlying support for the market looks like, you know, in spite of what we see as probably friendly or supportive fundamentals.
Well, so I do have a question related to this, because you said money flow and fundamentals of the market. Now, you could have meant simple supply and demand, or you could have meant fundamentally the money flow is playing in the marketplace. Which was that, and can you give me an explanation of what you meant?
Yeah, sure, Todd. It's a good point. So let's clarify. Supply and demand fundamentals of the grain market. So supply and demand of grain, and essentially boiling down to an ending stocks. And when you look at things right now, the USDA has a record, you know, U.S. national corn yield plugged into their balance sheet. And in doing so, they don't have an overly burdensome carryout. That national, you know, getting to a record yield nationally, I think, in light of the challenges that we faced, I mean, pick Prevent Plan in North Dakota, pick, you know, hail and severe storms and knocking out of pivots in Nebraska, pick drought in East Central Illinois, pick in Kentucky and Tennessee right in the heart of pollination, or pick your poison. It's not a disaster, but it's certainly, I don't think, a recipe for a national yield. And that tells me that number can come down and that carryout can tighten. Beans, a very similar story, where they've got the second best ever national yield plugged in. It's a little bit early to be judging on beans, but certainly we've had our challenges along the way as well. So the bar is set pretty high to keep these carryouts at what I would call a somewhat comfortable level and allow the market to sustain a downtrend. And I really think, you know, in light of what we've seen, the risk there is probably that those balance sheets continue to tighten with the USDA. And, you know, last month they lost 2.6 million acres of soybeans. They'll probably find some of that back on the resurvey, but we won't know that until August.
Mike Zuzlo, the wheat market has had a very, very bad 6 weeks, off more than $4. You'll have to tell me really how far off it is. I didn't check. Corn and soybeans had a rough week last week into this week. Thursday of this week, not so bad. So I'm wondering if this outside influence of lots and lots of money, and we've talked about this before, has put upside pressure and downside pressure both into the marketplace, so that it really is not finding the actual price, relatively speaking. And when it comes out, it really throws volatility into the marketplace, and then that's why we got the bounce, for instance, on Thursday.
Yeah, I think there was a fundamental factor, and I think it ties nicely into what Chip and Dave are saying, Todd. This is where the real change in the market dynamic came early in the morning on Thursday morning, when China was reportedly going to release a $220 billion stimulus package in the form of a bond sale specifically for infrastructure. And when the trade saw that, and Reuters picked it up from Bloomberg, so we don't know if it's really going to happen or not yet, but Bloomberg reported that it was coming. And I think that really changed the market dynamic. And to your point, that type of news, that type of emerging market news, when the emerging market news has been so bad the last 3 months because of what Dave tapped into and Chip about the strengthening dollar and the strengthening U.S. bond yields, those are two recipes for disaster historically for emerging markets because their debt loads go up, and they, unless they're a big commodity exporter, they're really getting hit with very less and less and less buying power for those important commodities that they need to buy, like energy and food. And so that's what we're waiting for, in my opinion, to answer the question from my desk of what, you know, Chip was talking about and what Dave was talking about is we need a lower dollar and we need higher bonds, meaning lower bond yields. And we need a dollar sell signal. We need a copper buy signal. And if we can get that, then I think those inflation bulls, those macro bulls can come back in because they see a more positive emerging market the second half of the calendar year. But to me, that was the number one thing that changed the dynamic and kind of solidified this is not about supply-demand weather fundamentals or supply-demand wheat fundamentals and our exports being down, you know, 7, 8, 10% year-to-date.
I'll come back to this, but Chip, you did mention weather, and I want you to go ahead and make the argument or assessment that you were hoping to.
Yeah, well, I think it falls right in with you know, the previous comments from Dave and Mike. So Mike hit on some of the sheer numbers of contracts of liquidation we had you know, over the last week or 10 days, and it's massive. And I think that most of that liquidation is behind us now. I think it drove us under the fair fundamental value, and Dave touched on this. Now, these rains that have come through the last 3 or 4 days have been pretty accurately forecasted by the weather models. In my opinion, so far, now we still have maybe 36 hours of some potential rainfall in some of the dry areas. And I don't want to underemphasize, there have been some really good rains in that, but I don't believe the coverage in the as much as maybe what was forecasted. There have been some good rains, but I talked to producer after producer who say, well, I got a really good rain on one of my farms. It was an inch and a half, but 8 miles down the road, it was 6/10. And right now, as hot as it's been and as dry as it's been in the areas, I'm just going to call it roughly south of Interstate 70 across Indiana, Illinois, Missouri, all the way south, an inch of rain might help for a few days, but it is so dry, and I think we've taken the top end off of the yield potential there. We're going to need more rain, and the weather models have been very consistent for days and continue to forecast that the last half of July into August still is very, very dry. So, you know, Dave mentioned this earlier. You know, we cannot afford to lose much out of the carryout. I think this upcoming report next week, probably not going to change, but is slap the market in the face and say, you know what, we got some rains around. There's still dry areas. Even with a 177 corn yield and a 51.4 bean yield, we're extremely tight, and the yield may, in fact, be going down, and it gets even tighter. So I think we overshot to the downside. I think the weather, in my mind, so far, has been a little bit disappointing with the rainfall amounts and coverages. And, you know, if we don't receive much more over the next a couple of weeks here, especially if the heat comes back, we're still undervalued because the carryout's going to shrink because yields are going down, in my opinion.
Dave, he mentioned next Tuesdays, and I have two, USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate. July sometimes can be interesting. It always incorporates the latest changes from USDA as it relates to both the grain stocks and the acreage figures. What do those numbers put into the calculations that you want to be watching on Tuesday morning?
Yeah, Todd, just real quickly on that. I mean, we've got the report coming up on Tuesday that will incorporate the acreage numbers. It will not, from the June 30th report, excuse me. So in the June 30th report, the USDA, you know, took out 2.6 million acres of planted soybeans nationally. They said that they're going to resurvey, particularly in the northern plains states, so Minnesota and the Dakotas, and release that on the August report. So we're going to have a little bit of a gap here between what we get on the July report that incorporates the June 30th number and the loss of those soybean acres and waiting for August and some recapture of at least a portion of those acres. Now, I think we'll get a portion of them back. I'm not sure that we're going to get all of them back. But if you just take it in black and white and you take 2.6 million acres of production away from soybeans, you're talking about around 135 million, you know, bushels of production. That essentially halves the USDA's current projected new crop 22-23 carryout from 280 down to 145, and that's a very much an intolerable, you know, type of a situation. It leaves essentially, you know, no pipeline stocks, no room for error, and that's without incorporating any yield loss and the things that Chip talked about. So certainly we're going to get a couple of, I think, fireworks, but they may be down the road. The USDA is not typically inclined to change their yields in June. We did have a little bit of a late planting year. There is some historical precedent for that, but it's not something that happens very often. So we're going to be looking at what they do with the South American crop, particularly the Safrinha corn, where it's expected that it will increase a little bit, as well as any demand changes that they make inside of the balance sheet. And when you look at margins of, you know, our exports are starting to lag a little bit, our domestic margins, both whether it's on the soybean side and crush, or whether it's domestically with ethanol and feed, and the corn side or the feed grain side, they continue to look very strong. Basis has been a little bit sloppy, but it's been generally firm this week. We saw a 40-cent jump in one of the Illinois processors' corn bids here just this week. So it's, you know, as always, the USDA will throw us a few curveballs. We're just not sure exactly where they're going to come.
The places, though, sometimes get caught, Mike, is in the spreads. You wanted to talk about those as well. Which ones would you like to focus on?
Well, the row crop spreads, especially, Todd, the July Dease corn spread, still trading about a 150 positive over on an inversion, and the market's still essentially begging for crop. And on the beans, we're still running at about 240. Those are both down about 30 cents, 20 to 30 cents from their highs back earlier this week. I think what I'm looking at right now is, as we get close to expiration, and the fact that the September contract and corn and the August contract and beans are so far below that, and Dave just hit it, is you've got the basis supporting the idea that the July futures is more ripe than, say, the September corn, because places like Blair, Nebraska, and Council Bluffs, Iowa, Decatur, Cincinnati, all these places are running $1 to $1.45 over the September contract. And you've got places like Decatur, $1.80 over in beans, and Cincinnati, $1.07 over in beans. And so what I'm looking for this next week is pure direction in which is going to have to happen. The July crashes to the SEP in August, or vice versa. And this goes back to the rains that Chip was talking about. My thought was, if the June stocks report has such a heavy percentage of on-farm storage still, if producers get rains, they're going to really want to sell a lot of corn and beans in the next 5 days, roughly, and that's going to tap into this expiration in July. However, if we don't see those spreads break, then it would support the idea that we have a lot tighter carryover as we head into this year's harvest. So I think that's a really key point to watch over. I'll be writing a lot about it in the next week, because that really says a lot about, I think, the new crop upside potential.
Chip, do you have the same kind of timing within the next week that farmers will be making the decision about essentially what appears to be quite a bit of old crop that they have stored on the farm for corn?
Well, I'm still, you can't fight the USDA numbers. I still scratch my head a little bit based on what Mike said, that the strong near record inverses of July, December corn and July, November beans, and the fact that I just don't feel like there is a tremendous amount of old crop left out there. I was shocked that the USDA stocks numbers were as large as they were. It doesn't feel like we have 200 million more bushels of corn and beans than we did on June 1st a year ago. So I don't get a sense there's a lot of old crop left. I do think that if we do see a rally back towards some of these retracement levels, for example, 650 to 660 December corn, back up 14.25, 14.30 range on November beans. I do think producers that maybe were a little bit light on new crop sales that have received beneficial rainfall the last few days are maybe more likely to sell that rally. Otherwise, I think from a new crop perspective, producers may just shut the bin doors a little bit here and see what happens, especially if you're in one of the drier areas and didn't receive, maybe as much rainfall as what you wanted here over the last 5 days.
So I do want to come back to you, Mike, on this for some clarification. So essentially what you're saying is, if it's there and they get rain, that they will sell it.
That's right.
And that will be problematic for the marketplace, correct?
That's right. Then it'll also answer what Chip was just talking about, is it there or not? And I think that's where I'm really betting on that coming to fruition. One or the other's got to be the case, because it's coming down to crunch time for guys to move their stuff, especially if they've gotten rains.
I will say that Darrell Good always said, told me that the July grain stocks figures were the wonkiest set of the year. I'm wondering, Dave Chatterton, how you view this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, what they said. So, you know, cash is king, and I view the stocks data with a little bit of a question or a little bit of skeptical as well here, just in the sense that when you look at cash basis, when you look at where these are at, you know, I might have a little bit of different view from the other panelists in regard to farmers selling. I think there's, you know, as Chip indicated, really our producer, you know, pool, I think has very little old crop left to move here, and certainly they're down to what we can maybe term their bedding bushels or the last, you know, 20% or 15% of what they're doing with that at some point. Rains will certainly help the attitude here, but when you look at futures prices right now, we're really at or below the spring crop insurance prices. So that's 14.3 in soybeans. We're currently around 13.66 in oil futures, 5.90 in corn, and we're just above that at 5.96 on the futures close today. So I think farmers become a little bit reluctant to sell once we dip below that, feeling like they've got what crop insurance put in place. I think the other additional side to that is that they have already, you know, been aggressive sellers into this, or pulled that. But new crop figures, as we rotated up and saw, you know, $7 and saw $15, certainly got the attention of producers, and they have a number of sales, you know, forward sales, I should say, for new crop already on the books. So they will be looking for places to sell. And I think Chip indicated, you know, we get back into those retracement levels, we'll start to see some triggers pulled. But from a cash flow perspective, from a, hey, what I've got sold, forward perspective, and from a perspective of what I think about markets, I think these guys, you know, are going to be pretty stingy sellers here in the short term.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about new crop, both corn and soybeans. Mike Zuzlo, as has been mentioned, if the numbers from USDA reflect very much what would have been in the acreage figures, there is going to be a really small carryout show up in the July WASDE. One, do you think that will happen? And two, what does it mean for the price of new crop soybean?
Yeah, I think it should happen that way, Todd. I think we do still have a premium in the market for soybeans. I really do think, and I've talked to clients about this for the past several weeks, and I think we've even talked about it on your show as well, is I really do think the 99 million metric tons for new crop imports for China is going to be extremely hard to hit. I just don't think they have that demand base there at this stage of the game like they have historically. And so I think the beans are still carrying a premium when you put together both the lower supply, theoretically, and the lower demand, the lower export demand going to China, theoretically. And I think the other thing that really needs to be thought about here is we're trading at about a 613 soybean price in the Gulf. That's about $40 a ton higher than Argentina's upriver price, about $20 a ton higher than Brazil's price. We are still uncompetitive in both corn and beans against our major competitors who supposedly have a very big crop of both. So I'm less inclined to get excited about the soybeans rallying. I feel like what they did after the stocks report is what they'll do after the WASDE report, and that is if they get a bullish report, a price-friendly report, they'll look to the wheat and the corn for help. And if the wheat and the corn can't help them, they'll fall back and have to retrace and wait for wheat and corn to join them, especially the wheat market. I still think it's the leader unless we have a 2012 out there developing.
Chip Nellinger, when you think about the carryout in the United States for soybeans and the very small carryout it's likely to be, how do you have to put it in perspective with the export market and world availability of grain, or that world-ending stocks number? And what might it look like? Because it seems to me like this has changed the way, or has and is changing the way that producers in the United States have to think about the export figures and their ending stocks, because it really is more about the world market than it is the domestic market.
Yeah, it's, Dave mentioned this earlier. I mean, it's going to be critically tight. We were talking amongst ourselves in the office earlier this week and just kind of commenting, playing some what ifs. What if we fall below a 50 bushel national average bean yield? And somebody from our office commented, well, it's been forever since we've had, it seems like anything south of a 51 and a half bushel bean yield. Well, I'm in my 50s now. I've got a short memory, so I lift up the U.S. nation. 5 years, we've had sub 50 bushel bean yields. I mean, there's no margin for error for that. All that being said, you know, Mike mentioned there's some other supplies in the world right now. I don't think they're very plentiful as far as beans go, but South America is, you know, be rest assured, especially in Brazil, they're going to plant more acres, and I'm not going to bet on them having a third consecutive production problem down there. So, you know, within the next 9 months or sooner, we could be awash in grain if Brazil bounces back with a big crop or the Southern Hemisphere in general. But in the meantime, it is going to get really, really tight on things domestically. And, you know, this whole world situation, you still got the Black Sea issues, you still got some vegetable oil tightness in areas. It just is a real hard thing to kind of get clarified, I think, in my mind here over the next 6 to 9 months.
Mike and Chip did a good job of covering it. I think when you expand that globally, I mean, certainly I think fertilizer prices are a factor here. They have come down. They do indicate that Brazil or South America will expand acreage again. The supplies seem to be there and things seem to be going okay on that front. I think the opposite of that is in Ukraine where, you know, they're harvesting a wheat crop. They're slowly trying to export that crop via rail, but it's not going very well. But the interior bids that we're seeing for both corn and wheat to the Ukrainian farmers have fallen dramatically due to the transportation cost of moving that grain, you know, from one rail station to the border, offloading it on a truck, loading it again on a train, and then training it, you know, again to an export terminal, and basically is putting them under, you know, under break even in terms of what they're doing. And with everything going on in the country, we're hearing that some acres may go fallow next year. So you've got some of our global competitors that look like they can shine, others that look like they will continue to be in trouble, at least in the foreseeable future. So it's always about what we don't know. But again, I think the margin for risk here in terms of price starts to lean to the upside just based on we need to produce these crops, we need to get them harvested, and we need to get them, in under roof. And in order to do that, we still have a lot of weather risk ahead of us for our own crop, let alone planting and harvesting, another South American or Southern Hemisphere crop. So things will always, you know, ebb and flow here, but it's going to be interesting. I think the USDA has a very tough task ahead of it with the report next week. If they cut that full acreage out, and, you know, the market will assume that we will recapture some of those acres on the resurvey, and that will come out in the August report. But it's going to make for a very tight-looking balance sheet, at least, at least at this particular point in time. And I think it'll take a while for that to work its way out of the market.
We'll move on to a final thought from each of you in just a moment. Mike Suslow, I have one other area that I would like to cover, and Dave or Chip, if you want to chime in on this, you can. Earlier in the week, some of the ships that were in Mariupol, Ukraine, were seized and taken on by the state. There are 87 vessels there of one form or another. Does this just tell you that marketplace is simply not going to open up? It's not that they have been caught there since the beginning of the war, so it's not like they were moving, but it just seems like something we should pay attention to.
I think you're right, and I think Chip mentioned this. It is still very much an unresolved issue, and I think, Todd, the 22 to 25 million tons of grain is probably being whittled down that was supposedly being held captive in Ukrainian ports is probably being whittled down at this point by Russia taking it. And just today, the Ukrainians are summoning the Turkish envoy because Russian grip ships are sailing with grain that's coming from the Ukrainian authorities and their ownership. And I think between that and the story that I read that the United Nations is trying to pass and get millions of dollars to Ukrainian farmers for plastic bags to be able to harvest their new crop bushels because they won't have the physical storage that they've been accustomed to. It is still literally a train wreck over there. And I think the market, to your very valid point, one of the reasons wheat, I think, is still a leader for me is the issue that we still, the European Union and the market in general, still thinks the European wheat market and supplies are going to be able to compensate for the Ukrainian loss of supplies. But we have terrible droughts in Italy that covers a third of their agricultural production. The early yield reports out of France, the largest wheat producer in Europe, 20 to 30% light at this point. So I would not take that assumption on at this point. I think the market is going to have to come to grips with that.
On that note, let's wrap up. We'll get a final word from each of you. Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, your final word for the day.
Well, I don't think it's going to get any easier. I think the volatility is going to become a little more rapid. It's been bad enough as it is. I think Dave hit it on the head earlier. Keep in mind what your crop insurance guarantees are. Gauge how much rain you've had, what you think your crop prospects and yield and production potential are, and try to formulate a plan, and it will help you keep somewhat rational and less emotional in this deal, because it is highly emotional. There's more money flowing in and out of these markets than we've ever had. Moves that used to take 6 or 8 weeks now happen in 3 days. It is going to be a little bit treacherous over the coming weeks and months ahead. I'm still afraid that's we haven't seen the end of this volatility.
Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing, your final word?
Yeah, Todd, thanks. I'll kind of echo where Chip left off here. And as I mentioned earlier in the program, I think we've gotten a good lesson here in the last couple of weeks about what the outside, money or macro market influence can do to our markets. It can work for our benefit, and it certainly did earlier in the year, the first half of the year. It's been the other side of the shoe here in the last couple of weeks here, and we've seen that. You've had a pretty strong drop here across the board. And so in doing so, we're down $1.35 in corn the last 2 weeks, over $2 in beans in the last 3 weeks. That's the kind of volatility that Chip is talking about, and that you have to be ready for in an environment where it's a computer, algo, momentum-driven type of a trade, and volume comes in and out very quickly, and it's not the traditional, merchant versus fund type of a trade. So you have to be ready for that, and then I think have a plan for that, as you said. Right now, we've kind of weathered the storm. It looks like we may flatten out here just a little bit. So I think the key here is to focus on profitability and not trying to predict price. And when you get to a profitable level and you know where your crop insurance guarantees are, I think it's a signal for you that you should have offers out there and continue to advance your marketing where you can. And that's true of old crop and new crop both. Be disciplined and look for those, be ready to act, have your offers in place when you see the numbers that you identify as profitable. And keep in mind, you can always re-own those bushels via options, option call spreads, whatever your choice might be. But talk to your broker about that. But it allows you to eliminate some risk on the downside, keep an oar in the water to the upside here, and continue to harvest profits on your farm where you can. And like I said, be ready for a lot of volatility, as Chip mentioned here.
And Mike Zuzla, GlobalComResearch.com, your final word.
Yeah, just to dovetail on those last two comments, we've seen commodities lose 30-40% from their highs. Soft red wheat, one of them. Corn and wheat have only lost between 12-15, maybe 18% from their highs. So don't assume that they can't break that hard if we don't have a weather market or USDA doesn't push us. So I'm a big believer, Todd, still in bought puts. I think the cash market is going to rely heavily upon the supply-demand fundamentals. Futures will rely upon the macro side unless we have a policy change, like an ethanol policy change. So I'm more of a paper hedger and leave the cash alone at this stage for the next 30 days.
You may listen to the whole of our Commodity Week program anytime you'd like online at willag.org, willag.org, or find it in your favorite podcast application, places like SoundCloud and Stitcher, NPR One, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, and even Audible. However you'd like to listen to us, just check it out. The Commodity Week program and our closing market report as well. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, and Mike Zuzla, GlobalComResearch.com. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.